And now on Tucson Business Radio X, your home for real estate with Carol Nugent.
Welcome, everybody. This is Carol Nugent, your home for real estate, or as I like to call it, your radio home for real estate. Live streaming from the studios at the Stewart Title Building on East Broadway in the heart of downtown Tucson. And I'm very excited about this show today. Being the holiday season, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun. And as most people who live in Tucson know, our real estate market has been rolling along very, very nicely the last year and a half. And what tends to happen when the real estate market rolls along is everybody thinks it's a great idea to get into real estate. And I think a lot of people consider that even when the market isn't doing great. For whatever reason, it's a profession that has a lot of pipe dreams associated with it. But I think particularly when there's so much in the media about how well the market's doing, a lot of people's, we're in holiday time, so their visions of sugar plums dance in their heads. And I think most people think that it's a quick and easy profession. You can jump in, you can make a lot of money, you don't have to work real hard. So I thought that I would bring a little bit of reality into the lives of those of you who are considering it. And I certainly don't want to discourage anyone. I love being a realtor, and I don't think I'd want to be doing anything else at this point in my life. But I do think that it's important, just as when I work with clients, I feel like my most important responsibility is to manage their expectations. And so that's really what this program is about, is for those of you who might be thinking about jumping into the real estate profession. The goal here today is just to kind of manage your expectations so that you come in with a little more awareness about what might actually happen once you dive in, as opposed to whatever wishful thinking you might be having. And I'm very excited. I have two wonderful guests sharing the program with me today. I wanted to bring some variety to the program because we have 6,300 realtors in Tucson, which is pretty remarkable considering the size of our metropolitan area. But I wanted to provide an opportunity for listeners to hear different types of experiences from different types of agents. So my first guest is Sonia Phoenix, and she's a colleague of mine at Coldwell Banker, so I know that she is a very dedicated real estate agent, and she has extremely strong values and feels a great sense of responsibility to her clients. And she has a wonderful diversified background, which allows her to relate with a lot of different people, which I also think is a very important quality and skill to have in this business. She's committed to providing the highest quality of customer service. Wonderfully, in the Tucson area, Sonia is fluent in Spanish. And very interestingly, she is part of a team of agents that offer their services in Arabic, French, Portuguese, and Spanish, as well as English. And so their linguistic ability really allows this team to guide their clients through what are complex processes to begin with, much less if English is your second language. So I think that's a wonderful service, and I'm looking forward to learning more about that. But most importantly, Sonia is a brand new grandmother.
Thank you.
So congratulations, and thank you so much for being here today, and welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so thankful that you allowed me to come to your show.
And my next guest is a voice, certainly a face, but you may well recognize this voice, Tom McNamara, who was well known and much beloved as the anchor at KVOA locally. He's actually been in the broadcasting business for 40 years, all television.
Mm-hmm. Almost. A little bit of radio at the beginning.
Radio. Yeah. Well, if I lose my voice, I'm handing it off to you.
I'm back to my roots. Okay.
And interestingly enough, 5 years ago, Tom did jump into real estate. And so I think that he has a wonderful perspective to bring to those of you who might be considering this business. So he's been actually a licensed realtor for 12 years.
About that, yeah.
And the first 7 years, he was really using his license to do some of his own investing and flipping.
Exactly, yeah. And that's where I caught the fever. Here I am.
Which, again, is what a lot of our listeners are thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a lot of rehabbing and flipping of homes before he actually became a residential realtor. And he, as some of you probably know, I certainly know, that he still is involved in broadcasting as the host of Arizona Illustrated, which is a weekly program on Saturdays and Sundays at 6:30 on Arizona Public Media, KUAT, Channel 6.
Mm-hmm.
And it is available to be recorded on the DVR. So if you do go into real estate, as so many of us who are in real estate know, you probably aren't going to be available Saturdays and Sundays at 6:30.
Exactly.
But you can certainly record the program, and it's a wonderful program. And Tom is actually married to his former co-anchor, Susan McMullen, who went from McMullen to McNamara.
Yeah, just so it was an easier switch.
Correct.
You keep the MC and just change out the end of it.
And Tom and Susan have three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome, Tom. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great.
So I guess I want to start at the beginning, and I'm going to ask Sonia first, because ladies first. What got you into real estate, and what were you doing before, and what went into the decision?
Well, I was driving truck. I was the doubles for Fort Worth Carriers, which only delivers for Dillard's Department Store, with my husband. And we were doing that for 4 years. And once the kids graduated, we figured we needed another change because I didn't want to drive truck with my husband much more longer. So we decided something that I would love to do, and I've always loved helping people. I've always been in the industry of service. Mm-hmm. I've done... You know, I ran the bar, I'm bridal consultant and Antonio Milani specialist. So I've always been with people and learned how to help them out in whatever field they needed. So finding a house, it's just right up my alley, helping people with stuff.
So did you have any concerns about getting into real estate?
Not at first. I was a little blind. I'm like most people who jump into real estate. I got out of the truck. Went, took my classes. It was easy for me. And I was surprised with a lot of people who had been there and they had taken their final 5 or 7 times and they hadn't gone to Hogan. So I was surprised that they weren't educated enough to pass the exam. They'd been there so many times. And of course, every time you take the exam, it's $75.
You're talking about the licensing, the state and national licensing exam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just so our listeners know, your reference to Hogan, Hogan is the largest and the most well-known real estate licensure training school here in Tucson.
Yes, and we actually researched it and found out they were the most reputable and have the best track record. That's why we chose them.
Mm-hmm. And Tom, what about you? You have had a journey.
A great journey, yeah. I've had a lot of fun, lived a lot of places, and it was back in North Carolina where I met my wife that we decided, you know, where do we really want to sink roots? And this is a woman who grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, and I convinced her to move to the desert, sight unseen. She had never really been here, but I had worked in Phoenix at a television station back in the 80s. I loved this state and wanted to get back here, and she took it on faith, and here we are, and I had a great career in broadcasting, and proud and privileged to do the Arizona Illustrated program for Arizona Public Media, and thanks for the plug. I always appreciate that, and I always knew in the front and back of my mind that someday I'd be doing real estate.
Really?
I mean, we're the kind of people who'd be driving around on a Sunday, and there's an open house sign. Let's go. You know, we're not even looking for a house. Let's go. Let's go check out that house. And the freedom, the self-direction of this industry always appealed to me. You can be your own person. You set your own schedule. Work with people you really want to work with. And as Sonia was saying, that sense of service, you know, see it through to the end and make sure that everybody wins or nobody wins, like Bruce Springsteen likes to say. And so it's a natural fit. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it has been a good journey.
And so you were still in broadcasting, buying properties here and there.
Mm-hmm.
As an investor, were you doing rentals, mm-hmm. or you were buying, flipping, and reselling?
Flipping and reselling, yeah. Back, you know, when you couldn't miss, really. There was a time at the downturn, 2007 and 8, and after that, where there was so much property on the market. And, you know, you had your fill.
All short sales, yeah. And yeah. REOs or bankruptcies.
Mm-hmm.
So you could pick things up very cheaply.
Exactly. Yeah. There was a time when there was enough for everyone. That didn't last like most things. But
right.
Yeah.
Right. And so what caused you then to make the transition from full-time broadcaster doing a little investing on the side to moving into the business full-time?
I put myself in a position to make a major change. Mm-hmm. You know, I was late 50s by the time I left broadcasting. And that industry has changed a lot throughout. You know, we all know what the computer and the mobile, the cell phone, the smartphone have done to broadcasting. We're getting our information so many different ways now. And that industry has morphed. And, you know, all of a sudden I was one of the elders in the industry. It happens quickly. You go from being the young buck to the elder. And, you know, with the change, it's like, let the next generation and the one after that handle it. I want a little freedom and excitement. Mm-hmm. And so I was in position to take some chances, and I did, and very happy about that.
And so did you already had your license, so mm-hmm. you were getting your license on the side, I'm assuming, while you were broadcasting.
Yeah.
And then you just decided, did your contract expire? And so you just decided not
right.
to re-sign.
Exactly. That's what happened. And out I went. It was actually 5 years ago yesterday. Someone posted a few things on Facebook and I thought, it's been 5 years. Are you kidding me? But yeah, it's been 5 years and five good years. I've enjoyed this.
Well, they've been good years to be in the business,
mm-hmm.
especially the last three.
Yeah, because what you were saying before, when everyone thinks it's a great thing to do, like chasing a stock, you can't miss with this particular stock. You can't miss with real estate. And there was a lot of that, we all remember, back around 06, 07, 08, when the downturn came and a lot of folks were newly licensed. So, yeah.
So my question to both of you is, what's been the hardest part of coming into real estate, residential sales, or what's been the most surprising?
Well, I think the hardest part was that there's so much paperwork and I wasn't as organized as I should have. Uh-huh. And if you're not organized, it's like you get all this information, like trying to get a sip of water through a fire hydrant, and it's just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. And what about surprising?
Surprising that if you know, once you find a good lender, they can do miracles to help your clients. And I was surprised that, you know, some of the people that you thought, oh, there's no way they can get qualified, and the lender was able to find them, and it was also very rewarding.
So building your own network of support system, a network of vendors who provide different services so that you can provide even more service to your clients.
Yeah, you have to.
And what about you, Tom? What was the hardest or maybe the most surprising or both?
You know, it's hard work. I honestly didn't realize how hard it would be to be a realtor. I knew that there was work involved. If you wanted to make a good living, you're going to have to hustle and really get out and get after it, mm-hmm. and follow through and carry through. But it was even more work than I bargained for.
You didn't expect to be working 60 or 70 hours a week?
I didn't, no. I thought 50 I was okay with, but uh-huh. and much like the restaurant business, for example, it all comes at once sometimes. Mm-hmm. You have to be ready. You have to be there when it comes, mm-hmm. to make things happen, to hold hands, to explain, to carry through process. Mm-hmm. And just the sheer volume and intensity of the work, and as Sonia mentioned, the detail involved is incredible. And I'm glad we can sign digitally and do a lot of things on our computer, because the realtors who were out there before we got in the business, who are driving paperwork all over town, wow. So that was the biggest eye-opener, I'd say, for me.
I know, I find myself, it's interesting what you say about driving across town. I have a little saying. technology is great when it works, because there are certainly times. We have so many software programs and platforms that those of you who might be considering real estate, if you don't feel comfortable in a digital environment, you might find that that's your greatest learning curve, because it's, I know I was surprised by that. I've worked so hard to increase my digital skills. But I've also had a few clients who were older who didn't have computer skills or who didn't have computers. I just closed a deal with a couple who didn't even have a computer. They had an iPad. So I was having to drive across town to get what we call in the business wet signatures, which is with a pen. And so it really, it kind of gave me an appreciation for the digital signature ability across the board, not just that we can have our clients sign all of these documents digitally, but that lenders, the escrow process, that so much of real estate has become a digital, medium-focused industry. Well, I'm just curious to ask you, Tom, are there similarities between broadcasting and real estate, or are there differences?
Anything? Long hours. A typical work day is never typical, and the same with a work week. It's funny because with what I used to do, it was all immediacy. It couldn't wait. Had to be done right away. It's got to go on the air or it's worthless. It's stale by tomorrow. And I'm not saying this is a good thing, but I've carried through that attitude with what I do now. And I still have this thing in my brain where whatever needs to be done now and can't wait till tomorrow. And you have to learn to sort of separate, channel things, time things out a little bit better so that you don't go wacky, you know, just trying to keep up and keep ahead of things like that. So I hope I answered your question. I think I strayed a little bit.
No, that's all right.
But yeah, but that's, you know, that was another awakening that I had too, that the similarities, hard work, the unexpected, every deal is different. Every story was different when I was back in the news business, and every day was different.
So in some ways, broadcasting, if not the work itself, the milieu around the work, in some ways that prepared for your transition.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
As opposed to truck driving.
Well, you had long days, I bet.
Oh, I'm sure the days were long.
Yeah.
Well, I drove 11 hours. I was on 14, so I figure if I worked similar hours, I'd make good money.
Well, and when I was thinking about what you said about the responding quickly, I was thinking that that's really, at least that's a skill I've developed to address the problem that Sonia was talking about, which is how do you manage all of this stuff? I mean, you know, if you've got, I remember as a brand new agent wanting to get one deal, and then all of a sudden I had seven listings and three buyer's deals. I had so many things all over my desktop. I had so many documents coming into my emails, and this was the day when we didn't have some of the streamlined systems where you can take a digital document and directly send it to the digital program that sends it out to your client. But that was really how I've learned to manage it, is nothing waits for me. When I get a document in, it gets sent out, and as soon as I get a signature back, it gets distributed to whoever the parties are that it needs to go to. And because I think time management really is, as you said, Sonia, that really is a skill that I don't think a lot of people consider when they think about becoming a realtor.
Sure.
I think most people think about the paychecks, the commission checks.
It helps to be type A personality. It really does in this business. It really helps. Same with what I used to do,
Well, and I think that's a similarity to truck driving, in that reaction time is really important. You know, I know, I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about it, but I know the number one complaint that I get from the public is that for whatever reason, they don't hear back from agents. Personally, I don't understand that. I'm a businesswoman. You know, my business is number one, providing service to other people. And as a result of that, it does earn me a living, which I'm very grateful for. So I just don't understand. I hear this all the time from people. Well, I asked, I called so-and-so, I called that agent, I left this agent an email, and I didn't hear back from them. And so for me, when I get a lead, There's that reaction time, having a good reaction time. And
definitely. If you don't contact them within the first 3 minutes, you've lost them. They've already moved on to another agent. So I've always tried to, when you come into an open house, for instance, send them a thank you with the picture and a link of the property they've seen. Try to interact and make sure that they know that I'm interested in helping them if they need help, but never trying to steal another client.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know, if they've got another agent and they mm-hmm. might want to put an offer, at least they have the property to show mm-hmm. their agent that they could put the offer in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings me to another question that I think would be of interest to anyone considering coming into the real estate profession. I have personally been surprised at how much marketing I have to do just to get my business off the ground. And we may want to discuss this separately, but in particular, the digital marketing, because that's really, you know, we could have a whole discussion about. And in fact, one of my shows that I did a couple of months ago was on the iBuyers and how digital, the digitization of real estate is affecting it. But I'm just curious to know if you were both surprised by not only by the amount of marketing, which means you have to have a lot of marketing skills, you have to have a lot of marketing resources. So I'm mm-hmm. curious how you, if you found that to be true.
Yes. Yeah. You have to do it. It's almost like putting good photographs of a listing online. You have to be out there or they won't find you. You'll never meet them. They'll never mm-hmm. buy or sell with you, and you'll never be able to service them, you know, as you wish. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful, too. You have to have some degree of digital marketing, search engine optimization, and that kind of thing. And be careful who you select. Frankly, I've gone in a couple of directions with a small company that's no longer in business. But I was promised great things, and I signed on, and they're gone. And other efforts, I feel you are just another number or cog in the wheel. So you have to enlist the help of people that know a lot about digital search engines, things like that.
Could you be more specific about some of what you were looking for or some of what they are providing you so that our listeners will understand exactly the kinds of services that they might be considering? Mm-hmm. I know we happen to work for Coldwell Banker is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have a whole thing here. We have tremendous, and a lot of our marketing is proprietary. That doesn't exempt us from doing a lot of additional marketing, but there's a lot that's built in. But that's not true with all brokerages. So I think it might be useful for our listeners just to have some idea of what are the kinds of things that they might need to mm-hmm. be, you know, getting some resources for in terms of marketing.
You know, it's not so much the brokerage. You know, I'm not with Coldwell Banker. I'm right. a realty executives guy. But I, being the consummate lone wolf, right. by golly, I'm going to do my own thing.
Right.
And so I'm off on my own doing these things. Mm-hmm. And
what are those things?
Well, you know, trying to create a website that mm-hmm. really competes with the best websites out there mm-hmm. that might have, you know, the links, the immediacy, the technology that, you know, you're going to compete with the gorillas in the industry, you know, the ones coming along now, the Redfins and the big guys who really want to represent everyone all day, every day.
The commercial websites.
The commercial guys are, yeah, and you've got to be on par with them, or you look like the little guy with the pea shooter. So you have to enlist the right kind of help, the right elements within your marketing. Make sure they really know search engine optimization. Make sure they really know how to reach those buyers and sellers, or you know, you're going to be the Maytag repairman or repairwoman, if you remember those commercials from yesteryear. Yeah. That kind
well,
of
I'm
thing.
Certainly old enough yeah. to remember them. So
yeah, me too. Yeah.
Now, are you, when I don't want to get too technical here for our listeners, but lead generation is a very important part of real estate. We quite often talk about keeping the pipeline full. So is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about lead generation, or are you talking about general marketing that one of the aspects of your marketing is that it does allow people to find you?
I'm talking about general marketing, but of course the proof is in the lead generation.
Right.
And so you effort in a certain direction, and if you're not getting the leads, if you're not getting the clients, then something's wrong and you move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it might be wise to let our listeners know that it's a very common thing for agents to pay for lead generation with various kinds of results and for various durations. There's a lot of agents who will try these subscribed lead generation programs, and when they don't get any benefit, they get out of them. But, you know, I, as a new agent, and I'll ask Sonia to speak to this, but I think when you're so new and you want so much to get a leg in, you're kind of vulnerable to some of these marketing companies that are offering you 20 good leads a month for only $250 a month. And yeah, have you found that to be true?
And when I first started, I was getting calls from every lead generation. And I think I was getting at least five or six a day. I got to the point where I didn't answer them because it wasn't time for me at that point to spend money. Until you know what you're doing, you don't want to throw money out. You need to be ready when you get a lead, if it's good or if it's not, you know, and to determine that. But if you're just throwing money and you're getting this and you don't know what to do with it, it's not going to help you any.
And that brings up another issue that I wanted to ask you about, because I think most people who do decide to get into real estate, I don't know if the word surprised or the word shocked applies more, but the cost of being a realtor. What would you like to say about that? Because I think that that is something that you don't get, even at Hogan, which is an excellent real estate licensure school.
Well, I think Hogan just is there to help you pass. They're not there definitely to make you a real estate agent. They're really quick to tell you that.
Right. Were you surprised at the costs?
No, I wasn't. But I saw people literally fall out of their chair when they found out. I did some training with a different realty company in town before I hooked on to where I am now. And they said that they had people through there who went all through the license process. They took the school, got their license, came for training at the company, and got to a certain point, and then decided to find out what the costs are, and found out they're going to need $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 just to get going. And that's, you know, your signage, your cards, marketing materials, your membership in the Association of Realtors and MLS, all of that stuff.
And AAR and NAR.
And all of the above. Yeah. And it's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. And yearly, you know, you've got to pony up as well for these things. And it does hit a lot of people by surprise. I was not surprised. I did homework ahead of time. But yeah, the cost is there, and the ongoing cost as well. You get into the marketing then. You get into gifts for clients, meals, you know, all the things you do, your gasoline, your whatever. It's all a fixed cost, and you can't get around it.
And continuing education.
Yeah.
And relicensing.
Well.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky. We're with Coldwell Banker, and they help provide a lot of that stuff, especially to get you started. They help you with your first 500 cards, your three signs, your writers. So they do provide a lot of stuff.
Were you surprised at some of the other costs, though?
You know, I had already researched it. I'm not one to close my eyes and totally jump out. I was, you know, I was a little bit just jumping out of the truck, but I'd already researched it's going to cost me X, Y, and Z. We better have this much put away before I go in, make sure I have at least 3 to 4 months money for my bills, you know. But it is hard, especially if you don't like talking on the phone, if you don't like contacting people. Those are hurdles that most people just can't get over.
So I think, suffice it to say, anyone listening who is thinking about it, I think my guests have done a great job of suggesting that you better be prepared. You better be prepared, because if you aren't, you don't want to spend the time and effort and energy. I mean, real estate school, I know you thought it was easy, but I think for most people, real estate school is pretty intense, depending on your background. There's so much legalese. And I really, my heart goes out to people who've worked so hard in school and then worked very hard to pass the licensure exams, and then they get into the business.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? You know, so I'm curious. We're so, I feel so excited about, for the new agents. We have so many new agents right now in our, in my office, and so office Sonia and I share. And I'm so excited for them that there's actually business to be had. When I started, it was I've been in the business here in Arizona 5 years. And when I started, it took me 6 months to get a listing, which I got because a call came into the office and I got it off of floor duty. And it took me 6 months to get my first check, basically. And you sort of alluded to that. And I think that's another thing that I think is important for people to understand in terms of being prepared. You know, right now, a lot of new agents are getting deals within the first month, you know, or two. But you might have to go a long time without any income. And at the same time, you're having to pay out some of these costs. So I think that's also an important message that I would personally like to extend to people. Because as I did get some figures that, according to one of our agencies, 50% of licensees quit after 6 months. And after 3 years, 75%, within the first 3 years, 75% of the licensees have quit. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think that it's so important to get some of this information out. I can't imagine any business or industry with that kind of a rate that wouldn't be taking a hard look at what's going on here. And so that's my hope today, is that we've taken the hard look and we can be of service to some other people considering it. Again, not to discourage them, but just to go in with a more educated understanding and more reasonable expectations.
The other thing is that you've got to realize you have to do this full time. You can't have another job, something to fall back on, because if you have something to fall back on, you're not going to put the effort you need for this job, and you can't be dedicated to your clients. You won't generate more leads that way either.
And you've took the words right out of my mouth, because my next question was going to be, what do you think about being a part-time? I hear that all the time too. Well, I'm going to say, I do real estate part-time, and I give anybody who can do that a lot of credit. It doesn't allow me to give the quality of service that I want and to be as available as I want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say there are a lot of realtors. You mentioned 6,500 in the city all told. A lot of realtors sell one or two or three homes a year, and they're happy. They keep the license in their pocket, and just in case a friend comes along or what have you. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it. But yeah, I agree. You have to be full time if you're really going to make a go of this. And we talked a lot about the technology we invest in and the marketing, and it costs money. But you can get a running start for free through social media in this business. Over at Realty Execs, John Dwyer is our president, very smart man, knows everything about real estate and about being an agent. And he told me early on, you don't go wide, you go deep. Mm-hmm. You work your contacts, the people you know.
Sphere of influence.
Yeah, your sphere of influence is called, yeah. And I can't tell you how much business I've gotten off of Facebook. Now, I did have an advantage. I was a familiar face, but people I had never met, and I'm thinking probably 25 to 30 of them by now have bought homes for me or had me sell their house just because I made that connection on Facebook and massaged it. Mm-hmm. I don't try to sell people on social media. You bring them along on the adventure. So if you're looking for a running start in the business, you can do it without spending a dime. Just spend some of your time, work it a little bit, get your legs going, and good things can happen. Yeah.
Well, and not to brag, but to inform, when I moved to Tucson, I didn't know one person, and I'd only been in Tucson for 3 hours as a visitor. And I went to Hogan training, and then I went to broker's training. And all they talk about is work your sphere, work your sphere. I didn't have a sphere. I didn't know one person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying this not to brag on myself, but because I want to encourage, you know, new agents who they just don't know what to do and they don't know how they're ever going to make it. And I was in the top 500 in the city last year. So it's definitely possible. There are ways that you can do it, but you have to be willing to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to be willing to work for it. I wanted to talk a little more, or bring up, in fact. Oh, and by the way, before I do that, you hit the nail on the head, because one of the other figures that I wanted to let people know about is we have about 6,500 members of the Tucson Association of Realtors. About 300 of those are what we call affiliates, which for the public, for you to understand, listeners, those are banks, lenders, those are home warranty companies, different vendors who provide services, home inspectors, all the kinds of vendors that we rely on. So we have about 6,200 agents. Of the 6,200 agents, the average number of sales for 6,200 agents is 3 per year. So I think that's a pretty stunning figure for anyone who's thinking about getting into the business, who thinks you're going to walk right in. I know I had 30 sales last year. I have 20 this year, and I'm grateful for every single one of them. But I, you know, the first year I worked, I think I had 2 sales. So, yeah. you know, again, I think that's a little bit of a leveler. But what I did want to get to is there's so much emphasis now on teams. I have kind of strong feelings about teams. I'm going to reserve those to myself. But I think that it is another factor for people who are considering coming into the business. What are the pros and the cons of teams? And I'm curious what both of you think. Sonia, you started on your own.
Yes.
And have fairly recently created a team with 2 other agents, correct?
Yes.
So can you speak, you know, tell us a little about that?
When I was by myself, I was doing really good. I was running a market a certain way. And we got together. We just kind of hit a niche because we have a lot of Arabic speakers. And they just come in holding hands, their brothers, their aunts. So we've kind of just fell into this where we get the French speakers and Spanish, and it's a lot of work, but it's different because you don't have the full cut. You have mm-hmm. to share it with everyone, and you're doing twice as much work sometimes, mm-hmm. But you're still getting less than if you're doing by yourself. But on the other hand, if you have appointments or you want to go, like my daughter was pregnant, I told them, when she goes into labor, I'm out of here. And they're cover for me, so that is a positive. So there are pros and cons, and you have to make sure you get along with the people that you're working with.
And how does it affect your division of labor? Because I'm not very much in favor of teams because there's so many communication problems. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a realtor. I'm the professional. And as the professional, when I can't communicate with the people on the other side of the deal because the person who signed the contract on behalf of the other person isn't the person who's handling the deal once the contract is signed, and I don't even know where it's going. So that's just a little preview of my feeling about teams.
And the nice thing about our team is it all goes into a database. We have it on Excel sheet. We know what's been done, who said what was done, and when what needs to be done. We have access to all the files at all times. The only setback is I don't speak Arabic. Mm-hmm. So if it's Al's client, I try to, you know, communicate because they might speak a little English or they have their child. But at the end of the day, he's the one who has to go and mm-hmm. explain everything, because if it's in Spanish, then it's me. Mm-hmm. But we all have access. And the nice thing is, so far, all the deals we've had, nothing has fallen through because everybody has exact access. There's no question if you're like, oh, we've got a new deal. Okay. I walk in and I can look at the Excel sheet. I can see what's been done, who said what, and what's the next step. So mm-hmm. when the client or the listing agent says something to us, it doesn't matter if you're talking to Sandra or Al or I, it's like you're talking to one person because we're all on the same page and have the exact same access.
Well, and one thing I have noticed, because I do just happen to be physically, you know, in the proximity to you and the team, one thing I have noticed that I think you guys do that other teams don't do is you all three members of the team meet with some of the clients.
Yes, we
all. Your initial meetings, you're all there.
Yes. That way they know, they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that they don't, you know, they don't feel gifted somehow. Mm-hmm. So
what about you, Tom? You're working on your own now.
Yeah.
Did you ever consider a team? Or what did you have thoughts and feelings? Again, for people who are considering coming into the field. I do think this is very important. I know a lot of new agents, they go onto teams because they think there's a lot of advantages. And in some cases, there may be. But in some cases, they get very taken advantage of.
Yeah. And it's a natural thing when you're brand new, you're green, and you're trying to learn the ropes to join a team, hold my hand, and you give up some money and income and freedom for that. But it's probably a good thing for some people. I didn't think I'd need to be on a team. I really did think I had an advantage, and that proved to be the case. So for me, it wasn't the answer. I don't like going to meetings. I think I spent too many years in the work world going to meetings. I've thought about starting
corporate
a
America.
Team. Yeah, but it's just not me. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I just don't want to go to meetings. And I've been invited on teams, and I've said, well, thanks, but you know, I appreciate it. Maybe we'll do a deal together. But it's while it's not my cup of tea, I think it can be a good thing. And as with Sonia, I'm seeing more and more mini teams spring up. I mean, there are teams, 24 people, 30 people, sure, all through the office, everyone with their role. I think you were very wise to be small enough to keep that personal touch. And just, you know, the abilities of all the different team members with language and everything else. And I have a good friend working up in Phoenix who I attended real estate school here with years ago on a mini team. And they're killing it. They're doing great because it is more personal. And I think that's the way to go ultimately if you're going to stick with a team. They're doing, you know, very, very well. So, yeah, it cuts both ways. It's all about, you know, who you are, what you want, how you like to operate. I just decided I didn't want to be on a team, and I was thinking of starting one, but I don't want to manage people either. I just want to manage me.
And that's one of the things that I think about. You know, I've had people say to me, oh, you're doing so much business, you're going to have a team before you know it. I don't want a team. Number one, I'm committed to my clients. And unfortunately, I don't trust anybody else to give my clients the care and service that I know I'm going to give them, you know, and that's just my own personal feeling. I think it's wonderful, the smaller teams, especially when, as I know, I just happen to know about their team. Their team, it wasn't an idea of, oh, if we get together to make a team, we can have more business. Their team evolved out of seeing a need and being able to create this niche in order to serve clients more. So I kind of think that's neat. But as long as we're talking about that, I'm just going to, you know, I love having this mouthpiece. I get out to the whole larger audience some things that I think people don't realize. And there are some huge teams in this town that have the name of the team leader. And so quite often the public thinks that that's the person that's going to be representing them. And in certain cases, that person hardly even, you're never going to have any contact with that individual. So I actually have a video and some of my educational stuff. One of the things that I talk about on my, the lessons that I have about how to pick a realtor is that be sure that you ask whoever you're interviewing with, interview at least 2 to 3 agents, and be sure to ask whoever you're interviewing with if they are going to handle your deal.
Sure.
Know, because you may love that person and feel really comfortable with them, but you never see them again.
And you're right. That's not always a good thing. It's nice to be able to stick with the program and the client the whole way through. And this is a big deal. There's a lot of money at stake and, you know, relationships and we said it before, if everybody doesn't win, nobody wins. So, you know.
Well, I'm curious if either one of you, I've tried to lay out a lot for our listeners, but I'm curious if either one of you, if I've missed something that you're thinking about, or if you would have a tip or anything you might suggest for someone who's considering the business.
Okay, I'll start. Thanks, Sonia. One thing to think about is, along with all the expenses of getting into real estate and staying in real estate, all of a sudden, if you've left another career, you're not going to have health insurance. You're not going to have a lot of the things you used to have, very expensive, weighty stuff. And you can buy into group plans, but it's going to cost you with a family. You're talking $1,500 a month or more give or take, based on that. It helps to have a supportive spouse or partner with benefits. I will add, someone who might have health insurance takes a lot of pressure off of you as you're trying to get started mm-hmm. and get those first listings and things like that.
So, and that's true for income as well.
Yeah.
I think the ideal for so many people is that they have a spouse who's working, who has income coming in, mm-hmm. so they can really invest the time. You have to put your time in.
Yeah. So maybe situate your spouse or your partner in a situation that will be very supportive of you so that you can sleep at night and really work at it and not have that horrible panicked look on your face and, in your essence, because, the hourglass is draining mm-hmm. and you're under pressure.
Yeah. And that's how we had started as a team. My husband and I were going to do it together. And when he realized he wasn't cut out for making phone calls, and my husband is amazing.
Cold calls with a script.
Yes, the AMP class. And he's like, nope, this is not for me. I'm going to let you go and run. And he got back on the truck, and he pays all the bills that I couldn't pay on this salary at this time. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. eventually, it's going to hit. They say it takes 2 to 3 years before you're really making any money. You're going to hit and make a few deals. Mm-hmm. Even if you make 10 deals or 15 deals the first year, it's not going to be what you're used to making mm-hmm. in a check, because
right.
half of that is the tax. Mm-hmm. A third of that is your advertisement. And then you have this little coin left that you can use for bills.
Right. And I think, since you both raised this, the financial piece, I know, I think it's also important to inform people that you don't have reliable income. You might,
right.
I had a slow third quarter. I had a huge first quarter and I had a good second quarter, but my third quarter was just slow. And I think that's important, is you don't have reliable income. So one of my tips is, I always have certain set-asides. Every time I get a commission check, I set aside a certain amount towards my quarterly estimated taxes, which is another adjustment. If you aren't used to being an independent contractor,
right.
you are really asking for a lot of stress if you don't set aside taxes and pay quarterlies. I do know new agents who haven't done that. And then all of a sudden in January and February, they owe thousands of dollars. They haven't set money aside, and they haven't paid quarterly estimates. So another part of the learning curve, I think, is that this is your business. You own the business, and you are responsible for all these things that if you've come from a corporate setting or an organizational setting, you're not going to have, as you said, Tom, you're not going to have some of those benefits. So, I'm a little anal, but I'm grateful for that, because every time I get a commission check, I have a certain amount that I set aside for taxes and a certain amount that I put into savings, so that when I have those months where I don't have any income, I have a cushion. And I think that is a lifestyle that's very different for a lot of people when they get mm-hmm. into real estate.
Yeah.
It's the reason why a lot of independent business people don't make it. We know how many people who try, and of course right now it's very popular to be an entrepreneur culturally. Yeah. But there are a lot of challenges, and I'm not sure how many people think about themselves as entrepreneurs when they go into real estate. I think a lot of people go into their broker and they're like, well, where's my insurance? And, you're not going to take mm-hmm. out my taxes? Oh, I have to do this. I have to do that. I don't think they have any idea. So I think that's also very important information for people to be prepared.
And right. the other thing is, you have to realize you have to carry a higher insurance on your vehicle if you have any clients in your car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And most people don't realize that. And you really need to meet a tax preparer before you start making some money.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing. Another thing is, it's very important to get it, if you don't already have one, is to get a really good CPA who really understands and keeps up, because we had major tax changes last year that very much affected us as independent contractors. And it's very important to have, again, we're business people, and you have to conduct yourself as a business person. And any major corporation that didn't have all of the other professionals that they need, such as accountants and CPAs, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had asked me about what was surprising to me, and the other day in the meeting, Jim had spoke about being at a party and somebody standing there not communicating, but somebody else saying something off color. They could get their license taken away for something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Sonia's referring to a sales meeting that we had recently, and our regional vice president was reminding us that, you know, we had, and fortunately it wasn't an agent in our mm-hmm. office, but that, you know, and this might be something else for people considering the business to be aware of, is we have very, very stringent ethical and legal standards that regulate our business and therefore regulate us as professionals. And Sonia's referring to fair housing.
Yes.
Yeah. And in this particular example, nothing was said. The complaint was made because of the way the agent looked, because they happened to be present in a group of people when some questionable discussion was going on. So we, you know, we're public figures. I personally have been involved in an ethics complaint. I filed the ethics complaint. So I think that's another thing. If you're considering getting into this business, if you think you're going to come in and be a fast-talking, I like to say, no, you know, a fast-talking, slipshod salesperson, make a lot of money. It's another thing to keep in mind is we do have extremely high ethical standards, despite what many people in the public might think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're held to a higher standard.
We're held to a very high standard.
And we have to be. There's so much at stake, you know, in these transactions. Leads to another point. I think we're both very happy with the brokerages we're associated with. Brokerages have different personalities and different vibes. And to anyone new out there, I know the Hogan Real Estate School does this once in a while. They have career days.
Yep.
Talk to the different brokerages. See who you might be the best fit with based on the personalities, the programs, the training, that kind of thing. I think that's important.
Actually,
for newbies.
That's how I ended up where I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little older, and I've had my own businesses. I've worked in many industries. And so I, rather than letting the brokerages sell me, I knew what I was looking for and what was important to me. And so I went to the job fair at Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed, you know, 8 or 9 different brokerages there to get a feeling of who I even wanted to schedule an appointment with. Because as a new agent, every brokerage is going to want you because you're going to make them money. And the managers of every brokerage, they are held to a standard of how many agents they recruit. So I didn't want to just every brokerage wanted me, but I knew what I was looking for. So I agree with you. I think that it's important to know that each of us is responsible for where we end up. And some brokerages, they'll sell you and sing you the greatest tune in the world. So keeping your dignity, having in mind what's important to you. It's just like when somebody goes out to buy a house. It doesn't matter how beautiful the house is, what a great deal it is. You have to know what you want and what's important for you. Otherwise, you could make a mistake.
Yeah.
You know. I just want to say, because I thought I'd have this opportunity halfway through, but for those of you who may have just tuned in, or who, if you're listening to us on one of the podcasts that's available on a number of different podcast platforms, I'm Carol Nigut. I am a residential realtor. I happen to be with Coldwell Banker. You're home for real estate at Coldwell Banker. And I work all over the Tucson area, and I host this program once a month. And again, where's the program? Tucson Business Radio X, live streaming from the Stewart Title Building in beautiful downtown, well, Broadway, East Downtown, East Central Tucson. And as we're getting a little close to the end, I thought we'd take a minute to talk about what are the challenges or changes that you see, because we're in the business. But in terms of what someone considering getting into the business might benefit from knowing, are there changes or challenges that you see ahead?
always changes. Yeah, I think what we're seeing now is the big dogs coming along. Redfin, operations like that. I was asked to help find a good referral agent in California for a friend of mine to sell a home over there. I dutifully did that. Found a great agent. And another family member found Redfin. They came by, and it's a great program and a good thing they have going. Redfin,
that's at their iBuyer program.
They ended up buying the house, you know, for much less than a normal buyer would, but they had a lot of repairs and things to do. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of big dogs out there on the hunt right now that you're competing with all of a sudden, and you've got to adapt and adjust to this. And there are always going to be changes in our industry. Mm-hmm. And be ready. Be prepared. Prepare yourself. Be knowledgeable. Get the education. Take the courses. Keep it moving or the parade will pass you.
And yeah. I would add just to your comment, I want to hear what Sonia has to say. But what I would add to that is take good care of your clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because if you don't take good care of your clients, there are a lot of predators around who will be more than happy to take your clients, but not necessarily take good care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. You want to make sure you do the inspections for them. We've had houses from flippers that they look gorgeous. They have great lipstick, but then there's mold or the, mm-hmm. you know, water lines are all mm-hmm. plugged. So also Coldwell Banker's having an iBuyer too. So
right.
That is really good, where we get 45 days to make the decision. That gives us the mm-hmm. 45 days to list the property. Mm-hmm. And then if you have to leave before that, you get the lower amount. So mm-hmm. got to be mm-hmm. with a good company that's going to back you up.
Right. Well, and we happen to have interesting what you said, because now, because of all of the competition with the digital, I'm going to just briefly, for those of you who are listening who don't know what we're talking about, iBuyers is a term that applies to digital brokerages. You may well have seen billboards, you might be getting mailings, you might be getting even phone calls or texts. These are companies that are huge investment companies, and they will come in and buy your house for very little and sell it for as much as they can possibly get. They offer you the convenience of giving you a purchase without going through a lot of showings and the uncertainty. But there's a huge price to pay. And that is the biggest challenge that I see. And so most of the large real estate companies are finding a way to respond. So another thing that we're doing at Coldwell that we are actually just learning about mm-hmm. was we now have a program called Revitalize,
oh, yes.
where we will go in and do some of the repairs and then not get paid for them until the deal closes.
Uh-huh.
So as you said, Tom, we're all looking for ways to compete. And my hope is that that competition leads to more value for the clients.
Bingo. At the end of the day, that's it.
So we are very close to finishing. So I want to give each of you just a quick opportunity to say who you are and how people can get in touch with you and find you if they're interested. Ladies first.
My name is Sonia Felix, and I'm with Coldwell Banker at the Foothills. I'm also with the Shaheen team, and we speak French, Arabic, Spanish, and Portuguese.
And English.
Of course, English. And we also help with the translations and help people get the properties that they need and interpret all our clients for the lenders and stuff.
And do you have a phone number that they can reach you at?
My phone number is 520-609-6569, and you can find us at the website at TucsonHomes.com. TucsonHomesDreamTeam.com, I apologize.
And Tom.
Tom McNamara with Realty Executives Tucson Elite. I'm an independent boutique agent all over town like Carol, having a great time, taking good care of clients, and you can reach me at 520-820-7361.
Great. Thanks, Tom. And this is Carol Nigut, 520-448-6033. Call me with questions, and if I can be of service, thank you to both my guests. And we want to wish everyone a happy, healthy holiday season and a prosperous new year, especially for everybody in real estate.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
We hope you enjoyed Your Home for Real Estate with Carol Daggett on Tucson Business Radio X.